Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Salvatore Barbonis, who is a senior lecturer in sociology and social policy at the University of Sydney in Australia. He's also an associate fellow at the Institute for Policy Studies in Washington, D.C. Welcome to Background Briefing, Salvatore Barbonis.
Thank you for having me on the program.
And you're there in Australia, and the elections take place on Saturday. And although most Americans don't much care about Australia, or particularly its politics, there are some interesting aspects of it, not the least of which, of course, is that media baron Rupert Murdoch, who is quite dominant here with Fox News, etc., in being the Pravda of the Republican Party here in the United States, is also trying to shape the outcome of the election in Australia, since he owns between 60 and 70% of all the newspapers in Australia. But let's begin with some of the parties that are running. You've got the Bullet Train for Australia party that promises to be the least annoying party. You've got the WikiLeaks party, formed to support Julian Assange for a Senate seat, and he's done their campaign video from the Ecuadorian embassy in London. Then you've got the Pirate Party, which is all about having no claim to intellectual property. But the most interesting one is the Australian Sex Party, which apparently has a very risque campaign ad that went viral. Let's start with that one, Salvatore.
Well, the Australian Sex Party, I have to admit, I don't know much about. One you haven't mentioned is actually a very serious party called the Hunters and Shooters Party.
And what do they stand for? kangaroos, right?
I think you can guess. Yes. But Australia has what's called a proportional representation system with preferential voting. And preferential voting means that you can put your first vote to the Australian Sex Party, but if they don't win, it goes on to your second vote. So you can waste essentially your first choice on the Australian Sex Party and then put the Labour Party or the Liberal Party as your second choice. If the Australian Sex Party don't win, your vote will then go to your second choice.
And the other thing that I think Americans may not know, and it certainly I think is an improvement over the elections we have here, where only at the best half the population bothers to vote, you have compulsory voting there, right? Everybody over 18 has to vote, otherwise they get a ticket.
That's correct. There's compulsory voting in Australia. There is compulsory registration. So the government will come track you down. If you don't register but you get a driver's license or you claim health insurance, whenever you interact with the government, they'll pick that up and register you to vote, whether you like it or not. Similarly, if you don't show up to vote on the day, you'll get a fine. The fine is very small. It's $20. But even that $20 fine is enough to prompt people to vote. The registration rate is over 90%. The turnout rate is over 90%. So the total number of people voting is something like 84% of the population in any given election.
And, of course, we have a system here in the United States where the Republican Party makes sure that every one of their people vote and do everything they can to suppress the vote of the other party. And the Democratic Party, which has a natural majority, invariably fails to inspire its people to show up. So by comparison, the fact that only 50% at best vote in this country is pretty shameful in terms of the country being the world's leading democracy. However, let's move on to Rupert Murdoch here, the media baron who Salvatore Barbonis, who's talking to us from Sydney, Australia. You may have heard this extraordinary tape that Bob Woodward of the Washington Post revealed some time back, where an emissary of Rupert Murdoch's and Roger Ailes went to General Petraeus when he was still in Afghanistan and basically offered him the moon, said, if you run against Obama, Roger will take a leave of absence from Fox News and Rupert will finance your campaign. And they tried to basically hand him the whole presidency on a plate. So we've already had Murdoch trying to be a kingmaker here in the United States. But in Australia, where he comes from, he owns between 60 and 70% of the newspapers. I understand he's all out for the Tea Party favorite there in Australia, Abbott, the former Catholic seminarian who's a global warming denier. What are the chances of Murdoch being a kingmaker in Australia?
Well, Murdoch has been a kingmaker in Australia, and not just Australia. He's also been a kingmaker in the United Kingdom, in UK elections. And the interesting thing about Rupert Murdoch, you would think that he always supports a right-wing candidate or conservative party, but in fact, he supported Tony Blair in the UK, and he's responsible for Tony Blair having been elected in the 1990s, and he's responsible probably for Kevin Rudd having been elected prime minister in Australia in 2008. Rupert Murdoch put all his support behind the Labour candidate, the left-wing candidate, Kevin Rudd, in 2008. Now, in this election, in 2013, he's reversed sides, and he's gone all out for the conservative candidate, Tony Abbott, and it's likely to have an impact on the election, although I don't think we can really think of him as a kingmaker. I think we can think of him as, a swing vote, if you will, that may have a massive influence, but doesn't make the election.
And Murdoch specifically fell out with Rudd, who he helped elect in 2007, but he soured on him apparently because of Rudd's stand against big business with a tax on mining profits and the carbon trading, emissions trading plan, which eventually was voted in by the Labour Party. But I think what really upsets Murdoch is that the Labour government plans for a national broadband network that would deliver high-speed internet access across the entire country and that would compete with Murdoch's subscription TV service Foxtel. And, of course, here in the United States, we can only wish we had a high broadband system with these horrible Time Warner company that's been in a fight with CBS denying service over a corporate spat. And, you know, they bundle all of this stuff and charge you an arm and a leg and give you lousy service. So is that the real reason?
That's one theory about it, and pundits have been saying that Rupert Murdoch is anti-Rudd because a broadband network will threaten his financial interests. But I think it's remembering that Rupert Murdoch's financial interests in Australia are relatively small compared to his global empire. I think Rupert Murdoch's real interests in Australia is that it's his country of birth, and I think is probably still his country of identification. It's what he cares about. And I think he likes being a kingmaker in Australian politics, regardless of the issues. I mean, to put the mining tax controversy in perspective, Australia had Kevin Rudd as a prime minister 2007 to 2010. His own party dumped him as prime minister in 2010 due to a massive campaign by wealthy miners against the mining tax. Now, Rupert Murdoch was also against the mining tax, but one of those miners, Gina Rinehart, who's far richer than Rupert Murdoch. I mean, she has a $22 billion fortune, according to Forbes. She went all out against the mining tax. What's more, she even bought a strategic stake in Rupert Murdoch's competitor in Australia, Fairfax Media, which owns about 20 or 22% of the media, of the newspapers in Australia. She bought a strategic stake in Fairfax Media to help project a pro-mining point of view for the future. So it's not all about Rupert Murdoch. There are many, many more rich people in Australia, some even richer than him.
And again, I'm speaking with Salvatore Barbonis, who is in Sydney, Australia, where he's a senior lecturer in sociology and social policy at the University of Sydney and an associate fellow at the Institute for Policy Studies in Washington, D.C. Now, apparently there's another mining magnate who has formed another right-wing party that may peel off votes from the Tea Party leader Abbott, who Murdoch is favoring. This is a guy called Clive Palmer, and he's threatening to sue Murdoch because Murdoch called him a buffoon and a threat to democracy. And Palmer said it's time this fellow was brought to account. I could do it in an Australian accent if you like. It's time this fellow was brought to account, this foreigner who tries to dictate what we do. So what's going on there in terms of splitting the vote on the right?
I don't think Palmer's party is likely to get much traction. Again, because Australia has a preferential voting system, even dedicated super right-wingers who vote for Palmer won't end up harming the total Liberal Party vote. It's not like the United States, where in the 2012 elections, the Democrats were cheering on some extreme Tea Party candidates because they knew the Tea Party candidate could never win at the at the real election. It's not like that here, because here you can have an extremist candidate on one end, but if that person doesn't win, and they're not going to win, your vote just gets transferred to the next person down your list, and it'll go to the Liberal Party.
And the two candidates, Salvador Barbones, one, of course, Rudd, who conducted a coup against Gillard, who was the Australia's first female prime minister, and she's well known for her blistering attack on the Conservative leader, Tony Abbott, in Parliament. It went viral, the video of her accusing him of the misogynist that he clearly is. And he's the global warming denier. And Rudd, of course, is this urbane Mandarin-speaking former diplomat who amazed George W. Bush at an ASEAN summit by speaking in the Chinese language with the Chinese leader. He did say some disparaging things about Bush that went public, and the U.S. government was not too happy with him. I think
Right. They
probably might have been quite happy with the coup that when Gillard removed him. But let's talk about the issues actually.
By the time that happened, Barack Obama was president. So
right, right. But I think the feeling over here, what I was told was that they didn't disagree with the fact that Bush is an idiot, but they thought that it was an insult to the United States.
Sure.
You know, so. But let's talk about the issues in this election, because you do have a carbon tax there, which, you know, Al Gore thinks is one of the most progressive things ever achieved by any government on the planet. But that's the Conservatives want to repeal that,
right,
and they're actually getting a lot of backing from the mining companies on that. But there's also this issue of asylum seekers, record numbers of whom are crossing from Indonesia in these rickety boats, often capsizing. So paint the picture of what that issue is for our American audience here.
Right. This has been one of the most amazing things about Australian politics. Australia gets usually about 1,000, never more than 10,000 people attempting to enter Australia by sea every year. So it's a relatively small trickle of people entering by sea. They're called asylum seekers because they are, in fact, people who are trying to get asylum in Australia. They're refugees, or people who are at least trying to claim refugee status, mostly from the Middle East, from the conflict zones of the Middle East, Afghanistan, Iraq, Syria. This has become the overriding issue in Australian politics. The slogan is Stop the Boats. Both parties have very aggressive Stop the Boats strategies. When Kevin Rudd finally came out and said, we will simply turn every person who arrives via sea, we will simply relocate all of them to New Guinea. This was his absolute, you know, how can you get tougher than that strategy. Tony Abbott came back with an amazing response, which was he will go to Indonesia and buy the boats. That is, he will make an offer for fishing boats to anyone in Indonesia who is attempting to or intending to lease their boats to be used for a trip to Australia, which was widely ridiculed here, but the policy still stands that the Liberal Party under Tony Abbott, if they're elected, will buy Indonesian fishing boats to prevent them being used by people smugglers.
So how does this relate to the racist policies in Australia's past called the White Australia policy, where they wouldn't let anybody in except Europeans, white Europeans, I think up until about the late 50s or early 60s. Yeah, well, yeah. Even later than that. So
It's very closely connected. You know, like most countries, Australia, you know, has a heritage of racism. In the United States, it's anti-black racism. In Australia, it's been, first of all, anti-Aboriginal racism. And then it was, you know, racism against people from Southern and Eastern Europe, racism against people from Asia. But the real big current wave of racism is anti-Muslim and anti-Middle Eastern racism. A lot like we see in the United States with the surveillance of mosques across America. And since most of these asylum seekers are people coming from, like I said, Afghanistan, Iraq, Syria, they're really vilified. You know, they're turned into some kind of villain trying to sneak their way into Australia. I think what Australians don't realize is that other countries in the Middle East, like Jordan and Turkey and Lebanon, are home to hundreds of thousands, in the case of Lebanon, over a million Syrian refugees in Lebanon. Australia doesn't want to take a couple thousand.
So wasn't there some ridiculous racist woman that ran? There is a right-wing, an ultra-right-wing party, right? The National Party?
And it's combined, and it's it actually is unified with the Liberal Party in a coalition. So
and Liberal, of course, doesn't mean liberal. It means conservative.
It means liberal from 100 years ago, which by today's standards would be quite conservative, yes. The Liberal Party here is the equivalent of the Republican Party in the United States.
So wasn't there a woman who distinguished herself by displaying extraordinary ignorance campaigning for this racist right-wing party, where she referred to Jews as Christians, and she didn't even know the word Muslim. She referred to them, she thought that Islam was a country and that Jews followed Jesus Christ, right? This was Stephanie Bannister.
Yes. I mean, there are a lot of really extreme racist views in Australia, I think, like in any country. The shocking thing here is that the National Party, the very nationalistic, they won't say it, but everyone else knows it, the White Party in Australia, is not just some fringe group. It's actually officially allied to the Liberal Party in what's called the coalition. So this election is not between Liberal and Labor. It's not between Rudd and Abbott. It's between the coalition, Liberal National Coalition, and the Labor Party.
So really, racism is in fact the subtext, if not the agenda.
Oh, I think it's very obviously the agenda. Just as in the United States, racism is the agenda behind much of what the Republican Party does in the South, in the United States. No one will say it out loud, but everybody hears the dog whistle, as they call it.
Sure. Well, it looks like Murdoch's been using racism in a way to attack Rudd. They ran a front page in one of Murdoch's papers. The headline was "Kick This Mob Out," and it depicted the Labor leader Rudd as Colonel Klink, this bumbling Nazi commander of the old hit sitcom Hogan's Heroes, where he was wearing his monocle and wearing a Nazi swastika. So I guess you can say that politics is a contact sport in Australia, right?
Very much so. It's no holds barred in Australia. First of all, to be fair to News Corporation, I'm looking at the Colonel Klink photo right now. There is no swastika. I'm sorry. There is a small emblem of a swastika on a uniform. And they do say Colonel Klink. A lot of the press reported that News Limited had dressed up Kevin Rudd as Hitler, which they did not do. But on the other hand, you know, Labor has its own problems. I think it's shot itself in both feet in Australia. There's been this bizarre, they had Kevin Rudd, and then they switched for Julia Gillard, and then 2 months before the election, they switched her back for Kevin Rudd. So while they do face a lot of aggressive tactics from the Murdoch press, and Julia Gillard in particular faced a lot of anti-woman personal attacks from the Murdoch press. On the other hand, Labor has hardly run a tight ship in this campaign.
But at the end of the day, since you're an American living there, the difference is profound. Australia is a social democracy where the people have enormous government services that are taken for granted, stuff that you could only dream of here in the United States.
Right, full national health care. To put something in dramatic perspective, the Liberal Party, which again in Australia is the equivalent of the Republican Party, the right-wing party in Australia, has proposed paid maternal leave for all women earning up to $75,000 a year. The government will pick up their paycheck while they go on maternal leave for 6 months. Now, it's inconceivable to imagine the Republican Party falling behind paid maternal leave as one of its major election policies. And the reason we see those kind of policies coming from the right-wing party here, which, you know, like the Republicans, bills itself as a family-first, strong family values party, the reason we see these policies, I think, is compulsory voting. Everybody here votes. In the United States, 20 or 30% of the population is almost prohibited from voting, especially in the South in the United States. Here, everybody's expected to vote. And as a result, both parties have to appeal to all people.
Well, Salvador Bombones, I thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me on.
Again, I've been speaking with Salvador Bombones, who is in Sydney, Australia, where he's a senior lecturer in sociology and social policy at the University of Sydney. He's also an associate fellow at the Institute for Policy Studies in Washington, D.C. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program's available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. We can also contact me, and I'll be back again with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.
Time was